I'm Rob Sivak in for Tom Hall, and this is Midday. Roughly a fifth of the U.S. population and a third of the under 30 crowd say they've become disaffected with traditional religious institutions, and they're telling pollsters that they don't identify with any particular church or religious faith. They're called the nuns, as in none of the above, but most say they still believe in God. So why are they leaving the church, the synagogue, the mosque, and what are they looking for? On today's edition of Living Questions, we'll tackle those questions with a religion scholar and three men who'll describe their own odysseys in search of meaning and spiritual fulfillment. And later, we'll be joined by theater critic J. Wynn Russick, who's just been to see Spring Awakening, a complex coming-of-age musical now on stage at Spotlighters. Midday gets underway right after these headlines. Welcome to Midday. I'm senior producer Rob Sivak in for Tom Hall. On this very hot Thursday, with a humidity-driven heat index of between 101 and 104 degrees expected today and through the weekend, the Baltimore City Health Commissioner has issued a code red heat advisory for today through Sunday. Code red alerts, by the way, mean the heat is going to be severe enough to present a substantial threat to the life or health of vulnerable Baltimore citizens. So I hope everyone can manage to stay cool and hydrated over the next few days. And if you need to locate one of the city's many cooling centers, check out the health department website at health.baltimorecity.gov or call 311. Today here on Midday, it's another edition of Living Questions, our monthly series of reports on religion's role in the public sphere that we produce in collaboration with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. They're called the nuns. That's not a reference to the Catholic women's religious order, but to the growing number of people, many of them millennials born between the early 1980s and the early 2000s, who are checking none of the above on religious affiliation surveys. They're adults who mostly still believe in God, but who say they no longer identify with any church or religious institution, and who are looking elsewhere for spiritual community and ritual. According to a 2012 Pew Research Center survey, one-fifth of the U.S. public and a third of adults under 30 are religiously unaffiliated today. At the time, that was the highest percentages ever recorded in Pew's polling. Their ranks include more than 13 million self-described atheists and agnostics, about 6% of the U.S. public, as well as nearly 33 million people who say they just have no particular religious affiliation. But the survey, called Nuns on the Rise by the Pew Research Center's Forum on Religion and Public Life, found that many of the country's 46 million unaffiliated adults are still religious or spiritual in some way. And many also believe in the value of religious congregations, just not the ones they used to belong to. Growing numbers of Americans are embarking on a self-imposed religious exodus and exploring new ways to find spiritual identity and fulfillment. On today's edition of Living Questions, we're going to explore some of the reasons they're making that journey, what they're finding along the way, and how this trend is affecting traditional religious institutions. We're joined today by Alan Cooperman, the author of the 2012 Pew Research Center report and the director of religion research at the center. He's an expert on religion's role in the U.S. politics and has reported on religion in Russia, the Middle East, and Europe. Before joining Pew, Alan Cooperman was a national reporter and editor at The Washington Post and a foreign correspondent for the Associated Press and U.S. News & World Report. He joins us on the line from the Pew Research Center offices in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Mr. Cooperman.
Thank you, Rob. Glad to be with you.
Thank you very much for joining us. Joining me here in the studio this afternoon are three men with a variety of faith experiences. The Reverend Joseph Wood is a young Episcopal priest who serves as assistant rector at Emmanuel Episcopal Church in Baltimore's Mount Vernon neighborhood. A third-generation Californian who was raised as a Roman Catholic, he developed a keen interest in interfaith ministry while he was a student at St. John's College in Annapolis. There, he served as the vice president of St. John's Jewish Students Union. I'll have to ask you about that, Reverend Wood. He came eventually to the Episcopal Church, where he says he found a harmony between his deep love of tradition and his progressive morals. Reverend Wood, welcome.
Thank you.
Joshua Sherman is also with us. He's a program associate at Repair the World at Jewish Volunteer Connection. That's the volunteer branch of the Associated Jewish Community Federation of Baltimore. The charitable partnership works with local nonprofits to offer millennials in the Baltimore area a wider range of volunteer learning and service opportunities. Joshua's parents belong to Baltimore's conservative Chizuk Amuno Jewish congregation, though Josh elected to leave it and doesn't attend regular services there. But he remains close to the larger Jewish community through his role at Repair the World. Also with us in the studio is Terrell Williams. He's an associate organizer for BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, where he works with political, corporate, and philanthropic leaders to confront the issues facing the city's distressed communities. He was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri. He's earned degrees in political science and education and has taught for several years in Baltimore City Schools and at Johns Hopkins University, where he's helping train educators for the Teach for America program. Until a couple of years ago, Terrell had counted himself among the nuns, the religiously unaffiliated, but he found himself drawn to join a local church community, and we'll be asking him about that. Terrell, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And you're also welcome to join the conversation out there. If you consider yourself to be one of those nuns without a religious affiliation, give us a call and share your experience. Our number here is 410-662-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org. Or you can tweet us at @MiddayTomHall. So, gentlemen, this is a very broad topic, and I think to begin with, Alan, I wanted to ask you to give us some of the key findings that struck you when you authored this this report, the survey in 2012 of the Nuns on the Rise, as you called it. What stood out to you as the most important finding or the key findings?
Well, one of the things we were interested in, Rob, was whether the large and growing share of American adults, and particularly of younger Americans, as millennials, as you noted, who don't identify with any religious group, whether those folks are actually looking, most of them, to find a group and just haven't found one that's right for them yet, or whether they're not looking. And we found that 88% of them said they are not looking.
They're not looking.
Yet
your study shows that many of them still have a belief in God, a majority, 68%, I think.
Now, I can update some numbers just very quickly, by the way.
Yes, please.
Because since 2012, the numbers have continued to rise. And as of 2014, the nuns are closer to 23% of the U.S. population, 36% of millennials. Mm-hmm. Again, you are right. By no means are all of the nuns self-identified as atheist or agnostic, or another way of asking it simply is whether they believe in God. And so we get about a third of the nuns tell us that they don't believe in God, but 61% tell us they do believe in God. And there is a portion of the nuns, it's not large, but something like 20% of them say that they pray on a regular basis. And so some of the nuns are actually conventionally religious or alternatively spiritual in some way. But it's also important to note that there's a substantial share of the nuns who, I would say, it's not that they're non-religious out of principle. It's not that they reject religion for reasons they've really thought and cared a lot about. Some are certainly that way, but some are just kind of indifferent to it. They have other priorities, other things they're interested in life, and they just don't seem to care very much about religion. And they tell us it's just not important in their life. It's not necessarily that they don't believe in God, but they're not strong believers. They're not active.
And your survey also suggested that their religious unaffiliation or lack of affiliation reflected other or mirrored other a kind of social disconnection in their lives. That this was in a way a kind of reflection of a broader trend in society, not necessarily just relating to their spiritual interests, but in their social interests as well.
Well, I would say that there are several theories about the deeper causes of the rise of the nuns, and I would emphasize that these are theories. One of them is that the rise of the nuns is primarily a political phenomenon, that young people are turned off by organized religion and its connections in particular to politics and maybe even more specifically to conservative politics and to conservative positions on issues related to things like sexuality, et cetera. So that's one theory. There's another theory that says, no, it's not either, it may not primarily be about that, or it's certainly not just about that. This other theory says, but this is part of a broader disconnection taking place in American life, and this is what you were just probing. Probably the best-known exposition of this theory is Professor Robert Putnam's book, Bowling Alone, the basic notion of which is that people still go bowling, but bowling leagues have really declined in recent years. And the point would be that it's not just religious institutions that seem to have a declining grip, especially on younger Americans, but really all kinds of bricks and mortar institutions. So other than perhaps gyms and health clubs, the notion is that younger people in the United States and the U.S. public as a whole is not participating in anything like the historic levels that it did in various kinds of places where people physically got together to meet, everything from, you know, Elks clubs and fraternity clubs to other kinds of civic institutions. And this, you know, decline in civic participation or decline in social capital, as it's sometimes called, is something that, you know, that some people are concerned about. But again, they see the decline of organized religion, the rise of the nuns, in that sense, not as a cause, but as an effect, a consequence of a broader atomization of American society. And again, I'll just emphasize, that's a theory, not a proven fact.
Yeah. Reverend Wood, does any of this ring a bell with you? Have you seen any of this sort of disaffection and disaffiliation in your own experience?
I think there's certainly a struggle to find community and find that meaningful connection, especially among young adults, millennials, as there's not the same sense of continuity as before. I was actually just talking with a friend last night who was wondering, kind of after college, after all of these kind of ready-made communities, how do you go out as an adult and claim a space and people to call your own? And as more people struggle with that, I think that leads to a lot of that atomization, especially as they're not quite sure kind of what it means to be religious in this day and age.
Mm-hmm. Joshua Sherman, what does this trend signal to you, and have you felt yourself to be in that trend, your own religious experience?
I definitely consider myself to be within that trend, although interestingly enough, just a couple of weeks ago, I was invited by the synagogue that I grew up in to give the Devar Torah, which is the sermon that you talk about, the weekly portion. And I went in front of the congregation and I gave that sermon. But at the same time, I think that I'm seeing this trend in the work that I'm doing with Repair the World Baltimore in people trying to find their space within specifically the Jewish community, outside of institutionalized Judaism, outside of the synagogue. And really for us, it's through service and working in the community and working with community members who may be Jewish, but a large majority of them are not Jewish, and finding that space to connect with our religiosity and spirituality through other means besides going to a prayer service.
Yeah. Terrell Williams, in the minute or so before we have to take a break, what does this signal to you? And did you feel in your own unaffiliated status that you were part of a trend, or was what was your experience?
Well, as now I know a former nun who believed in God and who believes in God, I think there is a loss of people wanting to be connected to something. It is an institution itself. Many people, I think younger people, don't mind not being connected to an institution. For me, I always wanted to be connected to this institution called religion, but I saw no place for me. I felt like I didn't fit anywhere. I'm a very open-minded person, and religious institutions seem to be very close-minded. So I just couldn't fit. I couldn't find a place, and I'll be glad to share later how I found a place.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Terrell Williams is an associate organizer for BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, and an educator who's been teaching in Baltimore City schools and helping to train Teach for America educators at Johns Hopkins University. Joshua Sherman is a program associate at Repair the World at Jewish Volunteer Connection, the volunteer branch of the Associated Jewish Community Federation of Baltimore. And the Reverend Joseph Wood is an Episcopal priest who's currently serving as assistant rector at Emmanuel Episcopal Church in Baltimore's Mount Vernon neighborhood. Alan Cooperman, he's the author of the 2012 survey, Nuns on the Rise, published by the Pew Research Center, where he is the director of religion research. He's on the line with us from Pew headquarters in Washington. Now, we've got to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about the nuns and talk about where some of this growing population of the religiously unaffiliated is looking for new kinds of spiritual community. You can join us at 410-662-8780, midday at WYPR.org, or tweet us at Midday Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to Midday here on your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm Rob Sivak, sitting in for Tom Hall. A quick look ahead to tomorrow's show. It's the Midday News Wrap, our Friday review of the week's top news stories. And joining guest host Nathan Sterner for that discussion will be Richard Cross, a conservative political columnist and blogger and former Republican speechwriter, Andy Green, the Baltimore Sun's opinion editor, and Julie Rovner, chief Washington correspondent for Kaiser Health News. That's tomorrow on the Midday News Wrap. I hope you'll join us for that. And coming up later this hour, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me with her review of Spring Awakening, a dark coming-of-age musical drama now on stage at the Spotlighters Theater in Baltimore. If you're just tuning in, this is another edition of Living Questions, our monthly series of reports on religion in the public sphere. And our focus today is the country's growing population of nuns, not Catholic religious women, but the 1/5 of the U.S. population and the 1/3 of those under 30 who answer none of the above in religion surveys. Helping us make sense of this trend is Alan Cooperman, the author of Pew Research Center's 2012 survey, Nuns on the Rise, and director of religion research at Pew. With me in the studio is the Reverend Joseph Wood. He's an Episcopal priest who's currently serving as assistant rector at Emmanuel Episcopal Church. Joshua Sherman is a program associate at Repair the World at Jewish Volunteer Connection, the volunteer branch of Associated Jewish Community Federation of Baltimore. And Terrell Williams is an associate organizer for BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, and an educator who's been teaching in Baltimore City schools and at Johns Hopkins University. And by the way, you're invited to join the conversation if you count yourself among the country's population of nuns. We'd be interested to hear from you. The number to call is 410-662-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org. Alan Cooperman on the line with us from the Pew Research Center headquarters in Washington. I wanted to go back to you and just flesh out some of the other implications of the results of this survey, showing such a large and growing trend in the number of people who do not affiliate with a particular religion or faith institution. Did you see any political implications to this trend? And was there a sort of a correlation between political attitudes and people's attitudes about religion?
Yes, Rob. There are a set of quite now robust correlations that not only we, but political scientists really looking at this for years have seen. One very clear association is that people who don't identify with any religious group tend to be politically liberal, tend to identify as Democrats or lean Democratic, tend to be liberal on social issues, et cetera. They're also, as we've just said, a younger group, and younger people also tend to be more liberal and more Democratic leaning. In some ways, just to give you a sense of it, you can think of the nuns as a, if you do think of them as a political group, and that's an important question, but if they were a political bloc, they would be a political bloc of almost the same size, at least in the general public, as white evangelical Protestants, but at the opposite end of the political spectrum. So if white evangelical Protestants are well known to be a generally reliable, conservative, Republican-leaning group, the nuns are generally reliable, Democratic voting, liberally oriented group. And they're of roughly equal size. However, while white evangelical Protestants tend to vote in rough proportion to their numbers, that is, they turn out to the polls in rough proportion to their share of the adult population, the nuns, again, being a younger group in part, and also maybe partly because they are, to some extent, almost by definition, a group that's a little less involved in civic life. At least they're less involved in religious life, which is a big part of civic life in the United States. They tend not to vote, so, or at least in proportion to their numbers. So while the nuns make up now something close to 23% of U.S. adults, they made up something closer to about 12% of the electorate in 2016. Mm-hmm. So they are not voting in proportion to their numbers. Moreover, almost by definition, because they're not affiliated, think of it that way, with religious groups, they're a little bit harder to reach. You certainly can't reach them through religious groups because they are telling you they're not part of a religious group. But moreover, it could be that part of what's going on with the nuns is that this is not everybody, but many of the people in this group are just not joiners of organizations. They're maybe turned off by organizations in general. Mm-hmm. And so it may be harder. They just may not be as cohesive a group. And in that sense, may be harder to mobilize and to reach as a whole. Mm-hmm. Than is a group like, let's say, white evangelical Protestants or some other religious group.
Yeah. Reverend Wood, as a man of the cloth and someone who has looked at a number of different religious institutions in your search for a faith that fits, did you make that search out of a disaffection, or what was the thing that motivated you to make the journey from Catholicism to you're exploring Judaism? What was motivating you?
I think you're right to call it a kind of disaffection, that I had this strong sense of spirituality, but the Roman Catholic Church and its kind of institutional thinking never felt quite like the church home I was hoping for, like the faith I really wanted to live into. So there was that examination, that exploration of a community and a way of living into faith that I could recognize.
Mm-hmm. And I want you to tell me how you managed to go from a Roman Catholic upbringing to be so involved and in a leadership role at the Jewish Students Union in Annapolis.
Part of that is just happenstance, maybe fate, that St. John's is a very small school, so all of the extracurriculars are kind of live or die by the student leaders, and this one young woman, one of my good friends, restarted the Jewish Students Union. I went to the first Shabbat dinner as a friend, show of friendly support, and then I stayed because this was a community, if not directly my own, that I could recognize, that was willing to doubt, to question, to wrestle honestly, faithfully, and passionately with these questions that I really wanted to at least begin to answer.
And the Episcopal faith appealed to you? Why, if you could simplify it?
I think it's about finding that balance between tradition, because certainly the ritual speaks to me and feels very similar to the Roman Catholic Church, but also being willing to look at the institutional thinking, the way that we have been doing things, and say, is this really right for what it means to do church? One of my favorite things that my bishop has been saying is, rather than talking about average Sunday attendance, how many people are there in the pews, we should be talking about average weekly impact. How are we engaging in communities in a meaningful way?
Yeah. Joshua Sherman, you made a decision as a young man to not embrace the congregation that your parents have been a part of. This is a very activist congregation, too. If I mispronounced it before, the congregation is
Chizuk Emunah.
Chizuk Emunah. The reasons you left it were what? What drove you?
So I think for me, leaving Baltimore and going to college in Ohio definitely created a separation of space between me and that synagogue. But even before then, I attended a middle school and a lower school that was attached to the synagogue. And that was really what was driving me to be a part of that community and a part of that congregation. And when I made the decision to go to a Baltimore City public school and stay within the city, it was really a matter of location, that I felt like the Jewish community was not a part of Baltimore City, that there were not enough outlets for Jews living within Baltimore City, and that most of the Jewish populations are in Pikesville, Reisterstown, Owings Mills, and I wasn't willing to sacrifice my community here in Baltimore City to be also a part of that community on the weekends.
Mm-hmm. But the Judaism was never in question for you. You never really left your belief in that construct of God and your commitment to God.
I would say I dabbled. In college, I studied religious studies with a concentration in Islamic civilization and culture, and studied abroad in Morocco. And I'm very much into interfaith dialogue. I love interfaith conversations, which is one of the reasons why I have been involved with ICJS over the past couple of years. I have always believed in God, and I've always considered myself to be Jewish, but that I think interfaith is really where I see myself and is where I would like to build my community and my religious community.
Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of people, millennials in particular, who are finding significance in the volunteer work. There is a very close connection between good works and good faith, isn't there?
Absolutely. The name of our organization is Repair the World, and in Hebrew that is Tikkun Olam, and that is a very strong tenet of the Jewish faith, is repairing the world. And it does not only mean working within the Jewish community, but it means working in the communities in which you live. And I think that a lot of people, especially a lot of young adults, are finding their spirituality and finding their faith through looking at service and serving the community and working within the community as part of their Jewish tradition, as part of their Jewish faith.
And Terrell Williams, your work at Build is also a significant good works.
And I'm
wondering if we can get to that that interesting discovery you made a couple of years ago of a church that fit your needs and expectations, and how did you come to find it?
It is Grace of God Ministries. I think the beginning was the conversation, Imagining Justice in Baltimore, that the ICJS started about a year ago. I was a part of that. And normally when there's a conversation around religion, I am on the other side. And I'm pretty good at talking, so I'll talk the religious person and sort of defend, myself against religion. And I couldn't do that with these conversations. I mean, I had to listen. There wasn't a choice. I mean, we had international speakers that would come and talk about the different religious traditions. And I had to really listen. And slowly I began to see common threads around love and support and inclusiveness, mm-hmm, that I don't hear in church. And I mean, normally, while sitting in the pews at church, I would hear people talk really derogatory about others who were struggling in life. Maybe the person's a drug addict, or they don't have the clothes that someone else might have, or they may be gay. And those things always offended me. I never understood why a leader would speak from the pulpit and talk negatively about anybody who sat in the pews. So that really kept me away from religion. The Grace of God Ministries was totally different. I mean, it was very open to wherever you were, because the idea was, you know, you have to be, you belong to God, not to the pastor. No. And it wasn't up to the pastor to say whether you were right or wrong. It was your personal relationship with God. And at that time, I was struggling because my son had left for Iraq. He is serving in Iraq currently. And I just had no peace. And I sat in those pews, and it was almost like something happened where all the tension and the stress that I was having after my son left began to dissipate. And every Sunday I would sit at that pew, and more of that anxiety would dissipate, to the point that I started having, you know, regular sleepful nights. And it was absolutely incredible. And I know it was tied to this whole comfort that I had gained from God.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I'm saying it.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that story. But we've got a couple of emails that I wanted to bring into the conversation. Catherine White writes us with a question: is how your guests see young nuns will raise their children. In spite of my own disaffection with organized religion, I know I had a strong foundation in understanding right and wrong. I didn't have children, but always felt I would have made sure they had some faith-based training so they could understand more of the world around them. How do you feel about that, Reverend Woods?
I think it definitely is a challenge because in churches, we're used to thinking of Sunday school, to children's formation, as the kind of central part of it. And I think that will certainly be true. But there's also a need for a more aware adult education, depending on people's backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
that if they have no real context, besides they want their kids in a community and have kind of a narrative, some sense of their spiritual life, they'll need support for that and kind of be offered the tools to help do that.
Yeah, Joshua Sherman, you grew up in a very strong religious training, I'm sure. Do you think that's an important thing for all young children to have?
I don't know I would say that it's important for all young children to have, but I think that it definitely worked for me and made me the person that I am today. And I can only speak from my own experience, but I feel that that there is an importance to institutionalized religion and to have that community and that kind of structured community, but it's whether or not that institutionalized religion will realize and recognize the things that they need to change in order to incorporate a larger community and a more inclusive community. And I think that inclusivity will bring people back into those institutions and will transform them in positive ways.
Yeah. Terrell, do you think religious or faith instruction is an important part for a young child's education?
I think it's very important, but I think the leader matters. Who's talking from the pulpit matters, I think, more than the institution itself. Because I believe, had I had Pastor Anderson, who is my current pastor, at the age of 12, I think I would be a different individual today.
Yeah. We've got a letter from John Smith, an email from John Smith, who writes, I don't need my morals preached to me. I can read all the holy books and all the philosophers' books and decide for myself what is good and what is moral. God never appeared to me, and I will not accept others claiming to speak for him if he exists. I think that has that's perhaps a sentiment that many nuns feel about religious institutions and the practitioners. We have a couple of callers. I wanted to go to Joan from Lutherville. Go ahead, Joan.
Hi. I am so excited by this conversation and very uplifted as well. Both the gentleman from the Interfaith, Grace of God Ministries, and the Jewish young man who's speaking also about inclusion. I represent the older generation, not just the youth of this country. And there is something that has been getting more and more disturbing to me and those of my generation, and that is there is no longer a real separation of church and state. And I think that that is unbelievably destructive to our democratic society. And I believe that that is growing out of the extremism that these very frightened religious entities, if you will, are operating to pull their people further into the detail and differences of their religions mm-hmm. versus other religions in order yeah. to hold them faithful to the sects that they are associated with, Catholicism, Judaism, yeah. Muslims. I mean, look at the wars that are happening in the Middle East among the Muslims, the Kurds, the Sunnis, the Shiites. Yep. They are killing one another based on the differences in the interpretation of their Bible, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's insane to me.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I would also like to say that the fundamentalists in any philosophical or spiritual pursuit are driving us away from one another as far as a population, a global population, a national population. Okay. And I believe that the interfaith, the acceptance of God's teachings, I don't care how you name it, whether it's, you know, which Bible it comes from, we are moving further and further from this because yeah. we are embracing more and more evangelically, even the Orthodoxy and the Jewish religion and the Muslim right. fundamentalists,
Okay, Joan, I take your point, but I want to give my guests a chance to respond because we're running short of time. As a member of a religious institution, Reverend Wood, this notion of religions as tribes comes up a lot these days. What's your answer to that?
I think that knowing your identity is important, but I think part of knowing that fully and honestly is recognizing what other people believe, engaging with them to say, oh, yes, this is something we can both affirm. That's something that challenges me. So I do think interfaith work is a vital part of the religious future so that we can live into our identity, but in a way that's about dialogue more than I would say tribes.
Mm-hmm. Would you subscribe to that, Joshua?
Yeah, I would say that I would agree in that, like the caller was saying, that there is a lot of extremism and a lot of fundamentalists, but to keep in mind that those are the smaller percentages of those faiths, but of course they get the most recognition in there in the news, but that there is a lot of great work happening at local community levels and even nationally to bring faiths together, to bring communities together. And that there really is a path forward.
Mm-hmm. Terrell?
Joan, I really appreciate your comment, and I think you're absolutely correct. I used to really believe that religion kept people apart versus bringing people together. And many of the comments that you made suggest that maybe we are getting worse and not better.
Yeah. We're coming up to the end of this conversation. I wanted to give Alan Cooperman a last word, if you're still with us, Alan.
Oh, sure. You know, I just would emphasize that the United States is such a fluid religious environment with such a dynamic religious marketplace, and people move in all different directions. They go from having a religion to not having a religion, and they change their religions in really large numbers. And one thing that's often surprising to people is that the nuns actually have a relatively speaking, comparatively low retention rate. And what I mean by that is the share of people who are raised without a religion, getting back to the question about how people are raised, who go on to take a religion, is actually very high. It's almost half of people who are raised without a religion tell us they've gone on to take on a religion. And it's higher than the share of people who are raised with a religion who go on to leave that religion and become nuns. But in absolute numbers, there are still many more people raised with a religion. So in absolute numbers, you've got many more people going from having a religion to not having a religion, even though the retention rate of the nuns is low.
Interesting. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have to explore this fascinating topic. Alan Cooperman is a religion scholar and the director of religion research at the Pew Research Center, and he's the author of Pew's survey, Nuns on the Rise. He joined us on the line from Pew headquarters in Washington. Washington, D.C. The Reverend Joseph Wood is an Episcopal priest who's currently serving as assistant rector at Emmanuel Episcopal Church in Baltimore's Mount Vernon neighborhood. Joshua Sherman is a program associate at Repair the World at Jewish Volunteer Connection, the volunteer branch of the Associated Jewish Community Federation of Baltimore. And Terrell Williams is an associate organizer for BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, and an educator who's been teaching in Baltimore City Schools and at Johns Hopkins University. Thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you.
This has been another edition of Living Questions, our monthly series exploring the role of religion in the public sphere, which we produce in collaboration with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. A special thanks to Annie Brackmeyer of the ICJS for her assistance with this project. Theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins me after the break with her review of a new musical production at the Spotlighters Theater. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.